This is the Senate Judiciary Committee meeting in Hearing Room B. Today is June 12th. Today's hearing is at 1 p.m. Bills to be considered for the work session are House Bill 23, excuse me, for the hearing are House Bills 2336 and House Bill 2337. The following 23 House bills are up for work session. 2651, 2007, 2076, 2083, 2085, 2090, 2116, 2126, 2205, 2222, 2256, 2257, 2258, 2334, 2359, 2361, 2461, 2649, 2671, 2685, 2743, 2795, and 2958.
All right, it's 1:35 p.m. The Senate Committee on the Judiciary will come to order. A subcommittee of Senators Fadley, Brown, and Fry will take public testimony on House Bill 2336 first.
These are pretty
much okay, Mr. Santos, come on up.
My name is Danny Santos, President of the Hispanic Political Action Committee. We'd like to testify on behalf of 2336. We have submitted for you in the book there an outline of analysis of what the law is currently and also what some of the problems we face, our concerns with the law. And also attached to that is the current status of the bill as amended by the House. What I'd like to do for you today is simply outline some of the concerns we've had from the community, the Hispanic community, and simply share those with you. The problem basically stems from, can be highlighted to an incident that took place in 1983 where some migrant farm workers were diagnosed as having typhoid by doctors in the Woodburn area. At that time, their understanding and the understanding of most public health agencies was that they were under, they were not only authorized, but rather their guidelines indicated that they should turn these suspected aliens over to law enforcement officials for possible INS investigations. The problem with this is that, of course, that if that concern starts to affect the community's acceptance of health services, we're likely to see that there's going to be some possible communicable disease out there that may affect the community at large, and these people may not come forth for health services if they're afraid of or concerned about possible immigration investigations. We believe that the bill simply remedies the situation by simply indicating that health agencies, state health agencies, really have no statutory obligation to investigate the legal status of the patients that come before them, that their responsibility be primarily one that they're obligated to, and that is health services. And we don't really think that causes a conflict with their services nor with INS's immigration services. So at this time, I'd be glad to submit that for your consideration and answer any of your questions.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, is there a statutory duty at the present time? Now, the summary of Ian Gross says deletes the requirement that an officer in a public institution inquire into the nationality of a person committed thereto. A person would not be committed, would they, if they're just in for treatment?
Well, no. What the situation that arose in 1983 was that these people were quarantined, and therefore the agency felt that came under committed, and there was misunderstanding about as to what commitment actually stood for. And that's the real emphasis of the bill, is to clarify that they really have no obligation, committed or otherwise, to inform or to do an investigation as to the status, the alienage of these patients.
Okay. Now, there's a second in the summary of A. N. Gross, it talks about deletes requirement of the clerk of a court report convicted aliens to federal immigration authority. Is that the case also? You didn't mention that in your testimony. I'm not sure if that's...
On the 36, on the summary?
Yes.
Okay, right. As to the convicted aliens, that situation wouldn't be affected here, simply because at that time their status has already been defined. What's been the effort by this bill is to avoid the public health agencies from having to do that kind of investigation, that kind of suspicion. But once they've been a convicted alien, then their status has already been determined.
The summary again on the ANGRO says deletes requirement that the clerk report convicted aliens to federal immigration authority. Is that correct or incorrect? I'm looking at ANGRO.
Thank you, Senator Brown. I really don't recall, you know, in our House testimony on that bill, the court clerk action on this bill. It was primarily centered on public health agencies and public facilities.
Well, the original bill, as requested by your organization, has that also in the summary. I'm not saying that that's bad or good. I'm just trying to find out. I thought this was a health bill, and I see it has some other implications also.
That is, like I said, that's my first indication of a court clerk involvement in this. I'm sorry about not knowing more about that.
Well, it's in the bill, you know.
Right.
It's in the summary. If that summary is incorrect, we should delete it. And if it's if it's correct, then I'm not sure if that's a proper or improper.
My recall of the testimony that court clerks really weren't involved in this situation. It had to do more with the public institution officers.
Well, maybe our counsel can tell us whether this bill does that particular... makes that statutory deletion. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Sure.
Senator Simmons?
Normally, in getting a medical history, doesn't the institution ask considerable questions about ancestry and other factors that might have a bearing on the health?
That's correct. They deal with a lot of patient history and family history.
And would this so if the institution was aware of the fact that the patient was in fact an illegal alien, would they under this they would not report it? Is that correct?
Well, our concern there being that the public health agency or public institution may not have the facts, all the facts necessary to make a determination as to alienage. For instance, a patient may have been born in Mexico, the whole family may have been born in Mexico and been naturalized, and unless they actually made a specific, you know, inquiry as to that kind of status, they really wouldn't have a proper facts to make a determination. The concern here, once again, being is that there's no preoccupation about the facts being brought out as to family history, patient history. It's more of the concern being that if this information is then turned over to immigration officers for their based on suspicion that they may be here illegally, what is likely to happen is that these families may not be coming forth for health services, and that's going to be an endangerment to the community at large.
Does a person normally have a duty to make a report if he knows there's a crime being committed or that an illegal alien is in the country, which I guess is criminal?
I think if that person has the facts to determine that, I think there's some civil obligations.
Okay, thank you. That'll close the public hearing. Stay right there, sir. Close the public hearing on 2336 and go to a public hearing on 2337.
Once again, I'm Danny Santos with the Hispanic Political Action Committee. And on House Bill 2337, we have submitted a letter for your consideration outlining the law and the problems and some of the ramifications. And once again, I'll provide you a highlight of some of our concerns.
There's an engrossed version of this bill also directly behind the tab.
Attached to that. Thank you. Once again, the large majority of the law enforcement agencies throughout the state really have not participated in the actual, or tried not to participate in the actual enforcement of federal immigration law. There have been isolated incidents where some individual officer will pull over a Hispanic or other foreign-appearing individual based simply on their appearance and try to enforce federal immigration law. What we'd like to submit for the Senate Judiciary Committee is that federal immigration law is in fact civil law and to be enforced by federal immigration who has the training and the background to make these kinds of assessments and these kinds of investigations, and really to protect, I guess, Oregon citizens from what may be intrusions, harassments by law enforcement, state law enforcement officials. The ramifications of this kind of enforcement tend to be many-fold. One is that it may subject local, county, and state law enforcement officials into civil liability for violation of civil rights. And really, has this problem tends to be one of a congressional level. Immigration and Naturalization Service needs more person power to enforce these laws, then it should be a congressional issue and really shouldn't be one of the state legislatures to put forth supplementary resources, state resources, to the enforcement of federal immigration law. I think in our House testimony, some of the issues that came up was, well, to what extent do we really wish this bill to go? And once again, we think that any involvement on behalf of a local, county, and state law enforcement agency providing the transportation, being the headquarters or the center for communication services, any of those things really brings those agencies into liability for assisting in what may end up being a violation of civil rights. And furthermore, I think the community itself is concerned about the expenditure of these resources on this kind of enforcement of the law, which really they don't pertain to the typical local, county, state law enforcement, while at the same time subjecting them to possible liability. So, once again, we submit this for your consideration and would be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Brown.
Did the, did your organization support willingly, say, the amendments to House Bill 2337?
We had no conflict with the amendments to it because what it basically led to is that once a person was in fact arrested for a criminal offense, the arrest was based on a criminal action, not so much the appearance or suspicion of being there illegally, being an illegal alien. That's our major concern, again, is not so much that we don't want to prohibit the criminal laws from being enforced, but simply to preclude either an intrusion or harassment of people simply based on their appearance, ethnic appearance. So once a person has been convicted or arrested for a criminal offense, that so much was not one of our concerns at this time. And a couple of things, too, is on House Bill 2337, the House support was 54-1, and I'll go back to 2336 and say it was 55-0 on the support in the House. So and this House Bill 2337 passed the Senate last session under a different House number, and there was a conflict between the House rules. So this bill has been through the Senate, it's been through the House, and we simply have been caught in technicalities back and forth.
Mr. Chair, I do recall, that's why I'm pleased to hear that, because I thought I was deja vu, 2337, because I recall testimony that I myself had witnessed local law enforcement people going into our high schools and pulling out students that were questionable in status, alien status. And, so.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, what would be the rationale? Why would a local law enforcement be wanting to verify the immigration status of a person that they have arrested? Why would they want to do that?
Once again, I can't see a real reason under their statutory obligation for the state or even county or local. I can't really see a reason for it. much of the line, Senator Simmons says that perhaps after getting a variety of information as to their background, or perhaps after the alien themselves may confess to the fact that they're here illegally, either on, like I said, either on the information given by the alien or a confession given by the alien, they may come under a legitimate suspicion that this person may be here illegally and therefore have an obligation to assist in the enforcement. But other than those two fact situations, I'm really not sure what obligation they would have to investigate alienage.
I know of no legal status to make reports. In the Navy, there was a general requirement to report offenses on military personnel, but I don't know that ever to apply to civilian life.
Thank you. And a large number of court cases, likewise, and public services have said that there's really no obligation to inquire into alienage. That responsibility falls on the Immigration Service.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. Let's see, and we have Paul Tiffany.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Tiffany. I'm the Administrator of the Wage and Hour Division for the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. I'm here today representing the Commissioner, Mary Wendy Roberts. My purpose here is to bring to your attention the possibility of a conflict in state policy as expressed in this proposal and that a pertinent section of the Oregon's Farm Labor Contractor Law. We are also proposing an amendment which we believe will eliminate any possible conflict. The Farm Labor Contractor Law prohibits farm labor contractors from knowingly employing an alien not legally present or employable in the United States. In order to enforce this statute, the Bureau has found it necessary to accompany representatives of the Immigration and Naturalization Service when they check farm and forest labor crews for citizenship status. Though the Bureau does not assist in apprehending these persons, it might be interpreted by some that the Bureau does, in fact, assist in the detection of such persons. Since a law enforcement agency is not here defined, and to the extent that the Bureau of Labor and Industries could be defined as such, the Bureau's activities regarding the enforcement of the section of the Farm Labor Contractor Law could be so severely restricted as to render the statute useless. This is so because only the Immigration Naturalization Service has a statutory ability to determine the legality of a person's citizenship status, and it is for this reason that we accompany them. The Bureau's activities regarding the enforcement of this section has been considerable. To date, we have revoked two licenses for violations of this law. We have another case pending in the Court of Appeals. We have two more pending hearings and six more under investigation in the agency. Therefore, so as to ensure that there are no possible conflicts, the Bureau proposes the following amendment. This can be placed at the, we propose it be placed in the, after line 5 of the House amendments dated March 19th, to read, for the purposes of subsection 1 of this section, the Bureau of Labor and Industries is not a law enforcement agency. Your serious consideration of this matter and adoption of this amendment would be appreciated. I have attached a copy of the pertinent section of the Farm Labor Contractor Law to which I speak.
Any questions? Senator Hendrickson.
Only to comment, I think it is a real problem. I don't know where the Hispanic community is on this amendment, but I think it wouldn't undercut the basic thrust of what they're trying to do. And it is a, I know that because we dealt in 1983 with legislation to try to address that problem, so I know that it's an important issue in the state.
Okay, you've provided a copy, have you, with our staff of that?
Yeah, we have it in his testimony, the amendment.
Yes, Senator Fry, it's in my testimony, and I have provided to your staff.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could we find out from the Hispanic Political Action Committee how they feel on that amendment?
Yes, oh, sure. Mr.
Santos.
Just go ahead and tell us.
Sure.
You familiar with that?
Yes. Mr. Tiffany was able, kindly gave me a copy of the bill or his testimony. One of the concerns we had was to try to make this all encompassing so that agencies would not find loopholes involved here. And I think what was being testified to today in by this amendment or the offering of this testimony is a little bit of a distinction. What we in fact would like to have the target of these kinds of actions pursue. And the target is not so much the alien as it is the employer for illegal labor practices. So we're really not opposed to that objective. And the other distinction we see within the amendment itself is that it is almost an after-the-fact type of distinction. They simply assist the workers in trying to get their wages back, and really are there only after the fact that the arrest or the apprehension has taken place already by INS investigation. So really they don't lead or assist to the investigation itself. So the semantics may be at issue, but that we're really not opposed to the thrust of the amendment itself.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chambers. All right, that's going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 2337, and we'll go to 2076. Senate Bill 2651, which is on the agenda, is a bill we passed out yesterday, and we were going to consider whether to add in Senate Bill 522.
Yes,
I've been told that that's no longer desired by the sponsors of 522, so we'll just go on with 2651 the way it is. So we're now.
Just inquire, Mr. Chair, they found a different vehicle, or this House side?
Well, Jim Cavill was the one that reported to me, and he said that there was a problem with saving this bill if we've got the other mixed up in it. What are we going to do? Okay. So we're looking at 2076, and that is.
Mr. Chair.
Counsel.
2076 is the attempt by the Law Improvement Committee to save Oregon's, at least a portion of Oregon's harassment statute. The court held that the that portion was unconstitutional because it violates Oregon's free speech clause, and it appeared that the court hinted that if the prohibition were aimed more at conduct rather than the content of communication, that it would be possible to save that bill. We had some testimony on it that conflicted on that idea. Anyway, the bill as it stands now is the House Committee's attempt to preserve that portion of it.
We did have some testimony about the problem. Do you recall, counsel, specifically what that was or not?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
One of those that I heard by myself.
Well, you're all here.
Well, in any event, I think that this is limited to the part of the statute involved in the case. And would take care of that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Chair, I'd like to move.
Yes, go ahead.
I'd move House Bill 2076, as amended in the House, to the floor if it do pass.
Okay, Senator Henderson has moved Senate Bill 2076 to the floor of the do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Brockman? Brown?
Aye.
Cohen? Bailey?
Aye.
Hamby? Hendrickson?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Wires? Fry?
Aye. That carries. Okay. House Bill 2083. This is pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, House Bill 2083 quite a bit similar as it relates to the coercion statute. The Oregon Supreme Court held that the statute was unconstitutional because, once again, it ran afoul of the free speech provisions. This bill represents the attempt by the Law Improvement Committee to modify that language so it focuses more on conduct than content of speech in an attempt to save the statute. And I think I may have misspoken myself before. I think this is the one that there was some degree of confusion on rather than the harassment statute. There wasn't quite as much certainty as that this solved the problem that it was intended to as on the prior bill.
Best is kind of a difficult statute to try and straighten out in one's mind, but any questions?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the bill before it be passed.
Okay. Senator Hickson will move House Bill 2083 to the floor. Do pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended. I guess my feeling for doing so is that it attempts to address the problem, and I guess the final test won't be unless it's litigated. But I think I do think the purpose of those criminal statutes against coercion are important, and I would like to make an effort to see them strengthened.
Well, Mr. Chair, did we have amendments?
No, no. The amendments that we've got are House amendments, so we don't have to move.
We don't have to move it as amended then, because that is legal.
Yeah.
Senator Fairley.
I can see that the House amended tortiously to become unlawful. Can counsel help me any by giving me examples of what the Supreme Court says unlawfully means? Or I'd accept I'd accept Black's Law Dictionary.
Didn't have anything.
I don't believe that the case addressed that issue. I think that's an improvement that the House Committee took it upon itself to make.
Well, but they changed tortiously, which was the way it was drafted, to unlawfully.
Yes, but I don't think that was in response to the case, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. How do I lawfully threaten to cause damage to property? How can I do that lawfully?
You could be a house mover, house wrecker.
Okay. Firefighter breaking
that's
with
good
an
point.
Axe.
But if I didn't have a permit, The difficulty has to do with we're dealing with what somebody's saying here rather than what they're doing, and the threat to do something in the future, and the sort of the distance between that talk and the actual social conduct that we would all recognize as bad. Then down below it said criminally, and that was changed to unlawfully by the House. I really feel I want to know what unlawfully means according to the courts, so I know what I'm talking about here.
Well, unlawfully, of course, is commonly used throughout the criminal code.
Is there a definition maybe at the beginning of it?
I'm not certain.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think the original statute didn't have any kind of adverb to modify it.
It didn't, that's
true. And I think that it would be, you know, unless you were privileged by law to be able to take that action, if it's contrary to law, that would be an element of the crime.
Yes. One of the action words up above is induces.
Mr. Chair, you could be a physician and tell the patient that unless you have this appendectomy, you just might be very ill, and the patient does have the right to abstain from it. So we don't want the physician to be using criminal coercion when he lawfully causes physical injury to some other person by an operation.
Right, okay.
Rather specious, but...
So you're in Newsbury, or you've got something else that you're...
I'm trying to find it lawfully and see if it's defined in the...
Can't find Doonesbury.
No, that's probably he might have an open.
It's been lawfully removed.
Or unlawfully removed.
I don't know if unlawfully would be defined in the criminal code.
if you assume that it means without a lawful right to do something.
I would assume it means contrary to law.
Well, but this is the law that it'd be contrary to. So putting the law that is contrary to, that it can't be contrary to that, I'm still wondering what element of the offense you would have to prove as a prosecutor, or whether it's a separate defense of some kind. I'm wondering what it does for you. It's the only change that's in the bill are the additions of those modifiers.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I don't think it would necessarily the unlawful would relate to that particular statute necessarily. I mean, if they have a lawful reason for causing injury to someone, it might not be related to them.
If I saw a completely deaf person starting to walk in front of a train, and they couldn't hear the train coming, and I shoved them aside, probably I haven't done anything improper, or I might be able to at least defend myself.
Unless you knock them aside into the train path.
It depends on whether I succeed, you're right.
This is based on the device costing around $10,000 a piece, and the Linn County Driving Under the Influence Task Force wanted to try for 10 people, and for the cost of the device to be used for 10 people for 2 years, it came out to be about $7 a day. And this is a figure we used. It wasn't meant to make any money, just to pay for the device. And that was the recommendation.
Okay. Now, I got a witness back here that thinks she can shed some light on this. Come on up, would you please?
For the record, I'm Nancy Farrar, Deputy Administrator of the Corrections Division. House Bill 2116 does not preclude the use of electronic monitoring devices. They're allowed as it stands in the bill. The courts already have the power to collect fees for supervision, and I don't think that it needs to be specified in the bill. From my perspective, the fees that the court can already impose would cover, or could cover, the cost of supervision through home monitoring.
I would think so myself.
Mr. Chairman,
send them around.
Is it not helpful to spell this out so judges don't have to speculate as to what they can do? There's lots of speculation in the world. It's nice, you know, some judges like to see things written down. It gives them confidence.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, judges already are imposing supervision fees that we are collecting and have been collecting for several years now. This is something that I think they already know that they can do. The bill can be used for DUIIs. I don't know that that needs to be specified either. What the bill precludes now is the use of house arrest for somebody who would pose a threat to public safety. In terms of using a dangerous weapon or threat of bodily harm, other than car, I guess.
I think with that information, maybe Senator Yee would agree. It's better that we don't if they already can do it, and then we would put something in limiting how much they could charge. They may need to charge more or for this service. We might actually be restricting what they already are able to do. I would be reluctant to try to have any idea what an appropriate fee would be. I think if that would be something the judge would probably have to determine after they had reviewed what the cost was going to be and so forth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if the bill does not exclude including the DUIIs, and the judge has the option to impose fees, I would withdraw my amendment so that the bill can move expeditiously to the floor.
Okay. Any other questions?
maybe our staff measure analysis, Mr. Chairman, could reflect that essentially what Senator Yee wants to do can be done by the bill as it is.
Yeah, I would. That would
make the matter very clear.
All right. Anything else?
I'll call the question.
Okay. Is it Senator Hamby? I think the motion is still before us. Any further discussion of Senator Hamby's motion? Call the roll, please.
Brockman? Brown?
Aye.
No, we were
Cohen?
To do all the priorities.
Bailey?
So aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Wires? Fry?
Aye. That carries. Now, I just wanted Senator Yee to stay there a minute because you'll recall that this committee passed out a bill that repealed the, I guess you'd call it the riot statute, which is a three-section statute. And from what I understand, the governor was concerned really only about subsection one. Senator Yee asked me if we ran into something that we could use to put subsections 2 and 3, repeal subsections 2 and 3 into, that she'd appreciate it, and I told her I would do that, and we are indeed looking for such a bill, and if we can do it, I'm sure the committee would agree to do it.
Yeah, could I ask a question?
Yes.
I thought the police had signed off on that bill. I recall that Governor's veto measures were some kind of police concern, but the police had signed off on that bill. Maybe we should try just to override.
Is a representative of the Portland Police Department.
They object to the mandatory language in subsection 1 also, that the police officer shall go out and arrest the crowd if they do not disperse. They didn't like that shall, the mandatory language. That's why they withdrew their objection.
I don't think it's any big deal, but anyway, if we are looking, Senator, and the committee, I'm sure will agree to do that if we can find an appropriate bill.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This can be done before the session's over.
Well, if it can't be done before the session's over, it won't get done then, will it?
Yeah.
Because there won't be anybody here to do it.
I guess not.
Okay, we'll take a look at 2126, please. Is that in a different book?
That's a black book. Yeah. At least mine's black.
Okay.
We want a hand-gross version of this.
This is one of the bills that we heard last night having to do with review of criminal cases in the Court of Appeals.
Yes. Were any members of the committee that are present here not here when the hearing was conducted yesterday? It was.
I wasn't, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I was here during a part of the hearing, but I did not understand the reasoning behind changing the conjunctive cruel or unusual to cruel and unusual. What does the Oregon Constitution say? Does it have or does it have and?
Judge Gillette testified on that, and I can't remember, but maybe Judge Joseph knows.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, George Joseph, Chief Judge of the Court of Appeal, the Constitution contains neither or nor and, it contains a comma, but it means cruel and unusual, and that's the way that provision has been read in the Constitution. This whole little thing happened because someone on the Senate committee staff noted that the legislation had always contained the word or, but that the constitutional language with the comma and the other words had been read as and, cruel and unusual. This started out as merely a conforming amendment. It was not meant to be controversial or very substantive. It was simply meant to conform the statutory language to the constitutional term. And that's why that was done that way. Now, I think it was pointed out, Mr. Chairman, yesterday that the amended summary on the House amendments of June 4 replaces the wrong or. The summary, the proposed amendments replace the correct or. The summary is wrong. The proposed amendments are consistent with the intent of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, if you found to be a Court of Appeals judge to be in error about what the Constitution says, or at least an ambiguity, would you be quiet or would you point it out?
I would sure as hell point it out. I hope you do.
I could hardly wait to point it out.
Well, I'm reticent. Article 1, Section 16 says cruel and unusual, okay. And then it says punishments.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm saying correct.
You could argue that, since it was plural, you could argue that it meant or.
Mm.
Or you can clearly say it says and. Well, either one.
But my point is that the only purpose of this was to conform that terminology to the wording of the Constitution. It's what it means. I can't imagine that it has any substantive.
Well, I can think of unusual punishments that many people wouldn't think was cruel. Is it cruel to have a person stand downtown saying, I'm a drunk,
drunk? Now, wait. I should go off food. The issue of it has never come before the court. It doesn't represent any change in the law because it has never been interpreted what cruel or unusual means.
You'd have to know what the law was in order to know whether it was a change.
That's correct. And it was not intended to do any such thing.
Well done, my damage. I'm entitled to retire.
One of us is, I suppose.
Not both.
I've often thought that public embarrassment would be a good thing to do, and I suppose I'm just slow in my development.
Well, this isn't your first experience with that, Senator.
Yes. You mean I've embarrassed you publicly before?
No, but I think so. I've never had that pleasure before, but I've seen it done, so I believe in it just like I believe in baptism. Same reason.
What I'm trying to say is that I think there are some punishments that involve public embarrassment, like being in the stocks at the village square, that aren't cruel and unusual. My values apparently are different than that of some of the courts, however, who think it is
It just occurred to me, I have a set of stocks in my office. We can test them. We can test that out.
There's a Delaware or New Jersey case in the last 30, 40 years.
Right.
The last 10 years. Anyway.
Well, this clerk, Senator Bailey, are you through?
Oh, I'd say I was finished as soon as he got back his spunk. Yeah.
It's interesting to note that cruel and unusual. I suppose we could say the death penalty was cruel, but if it was not unusual, then it wouldn't be unconstitutional because it would have to be both cruel and unusual. So it's going to still be cruel, but it's not going to be unusual pretty soon, is it? I don't know, maybe it is.
Well, I trust it will remain unusual. This is a personal matter.
Okay, anybody got any problems left with this?
Well, I got a motion. The substance of the bill would reduce the number of reviews of, and I'm wondering whether it will meet constitutional muster, whether the Supreme Court will look at this cruel and unusual and say there is a constitutional provision there, and you can't fail to review where a constitutional claim is made.
Well, that would be...
If you changed it back to or, yes. I wouldn't be as concerned.
Now, the word end put in the House, right?
Yes.
House staff.
Sua sponte.
No, Senate.
And I'm sorry, Judge, but did you tell us why that happened?
Because...
Somebody thought...
Someone had read the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Dangerous.
And saw how the word was and.
Oh, wow.
And that's a dangerous thing.
And does mean or sometimes.
And does mean or, but felt it was consistent with the constitutional language. And I acceded to that change, never dreaming that it would become the subject of controversy, because my primary issue in this bill is to attempt to reduce the impact of our having to sit, being required to sit in judgment of sentences for which we have no facility, and which for which there is another agency empowered, and it's simply an attempt to reduce that quantity of cases passing through the court. I understand there's some dispute about that.
I don't think that we could change the meaning of the Constitution, therefore I'm not concerned about the and or anymore. It will still be up to a court to construe
that. I agree wholeheartedly.
Senator Harrison.
Am I correct that in Section 2, by taking out the language, is cruel, unusual, excessive in light of the nature and background of the offender or the facts and circumstances of the offense, that is restricting the right of review?
That is restricting the scope of review and would take us out of what we refer to generically as the sentence review business, which we have statutory authority to do, which we have not exercised in any general way. We have said that we would only do it in effect. Despite what the statute says, I think it's fair to say, and I think Mr. Henning could go along with me on this, that we have in fact said that we are not likely to set aside a sentence that is within the limits of the law of the statute and it is otherwise constitutionally sound under the statute. But that has nothing to do with the number of cases that are brought to us primarily by the public defender office.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was wondering, though, if there could be circumstances in which a person perhaps was sentenced to what was in the maximum allowable one, but might still be unjust if you looked at the total situation. But you're saying that is not a matter the court is going to get into anymore.
That has been our case law. That has been our case law under this statute. Since 1978, I believe.
And I guess what you're saying is if you conform the statute to the case law, maybe these lawyers will quit raising the same issue over and over again.
I'd like to broaden the statement a little bit further. As it presently stands, the public defender is compelled by the existence of the statute to advise the person to want an appeal but have no error to proceed on, that they may have an appeal on the question of whether the statute or whether the sentence is cruel, unusual, or excessive in the light of the nature and background of the offender or the fact. Given the statute, it does no good for the public defender, for example, to say to the person, you're not going to win. The public defender can so advise, that the public defender is still required to bring the case, and we have anywhere from 25 to 35 of those cases on our docket. I would not try to make the committee think that those cases eat up a very great portion of the time of the Court of Appeals, but when you take into consideration the work of the public defender, the work of the case processing part of the judicial department operation, the setting of cases for hearing, the reading of the briefs, the hearing of arguments in those few that are argued, the post-hearing decision, and the general clerical work, the result of which in all cases is affirmed, then it's one that could be eliminated. Now, the public defender, I have no doubt, he's duty-bound to challenge the statute as amended.
Mr. Chair.
And that's what I would expect.
I see the public defender is sitting there, one of the public defenders. Could he come up?
Well, come on, Mr. Hennings is not the public defender to whom I was referring.
I'll have to say that we did have a hearing on this. Mr. Hennings testified yesterday, but...
Well, could I just ask, is it your experience that these cases don't have merit that are in terms of...
The ones that I've seen the reports on that weren't AWOPT did not have merit. My feeling is more and more with what the legislature is doing, by not looking at all of the possible things they're adding in terms of sentencing, this particular provision that would be removed may be necessary. What you just did in the last bill that you passed to the floor was to set up a situation where someone could be under house arrest for a misdemeanor for 1 year as a condition of probation when they could only be sentenced to jail for 6 months. And the present law would allow an appeal to the court and say, look at this individual. Don't look at the constitutionality. Don't look at whether it's within the limits which the legislature has said you can impose. But look at this individual and see whether or not this is the sentence that's appropriate. That's what's being removed. If it is removed, we still have a way of raising it. All we're going to do is change the assignment of error, and the assignment of error will be the condition of probation is not reasonably related to the crime and to the individual. But you're making it much more difficult, and you're going to make the proof element much harder than it is now for it even to be looked at.
Thank you.
But the trial judge, of course, has already done precisely what you say we ought to do.
Mr. Chair. I think there ought to be more review of the trial judges.
What if Mr. Hennings knows of anybody who would prefer to spend 6 months in jail than a year under house arrest?
Well, I have clients that would take that. I had a client who was very upset because the DA charged him with a misdemeanor when he wanted to go to the penitentiary and not local jail time. I have clients that would be a pleasure.
I guess I don't know too many of your clients.
You may have clients for whom being at home is cruel and unusual.
Yeah, you haven't seen their house.
or their spouse.
Right. Is there any other mechanism for the judicial branch to review a disparate pattern on the part of a judge?
A disparate pattern on the part of a judge. I assume that, and I think Jim would agree, it is conceivable that you could make a habeas corpus case that is directed at the behavior of a judge, but there's no standard method for appellate review as such, no.
Yeah.
There wasn't before the statute was passed in 1977 either.
This talks in terms of the rights of the individual defendant who's been sentenced, and I'm trying to think of the integrity of the judicial branch if somebody's really out in left field all of the time.
No, there isn't here. The Judicial Fitness Commission is one resource for that, although I can't immediately spot
the other way it's done is by filing of affidavits, but all that does is avoid the problem. It doesn't answer the problem.
Yeah. In the individual.
There seems to be no contention that the judicial branch has a mechanism for retraining a judge.
More under the statute, may I say. We have the capability.
No, I agree that it talks only to what the individual does, or the individual sentencing.
I think a judge's name and an appellate opinion has some retraining.
Yeah.
Well, it sure as hell makes for unfriendly conversation.
Okay. Leaving me with a quorum?
I'm not
Well, let me find out now.
You don't have
just a minute.
You probably don't have
What do you want to do with this?
I'm at the most marginaland. I vote on it. I really prefer not to.
Okay. Do you want to? Shall we carry it over or something, or do you want to table it, or do you want to? Somebody give me a motion.
I'll move past it.
All right. Senator Simmons moves to send House Bill 2126 as engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Six people here.
Okay. Call the roll then.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen?
Bailey?
No.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
No.
Simmons?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye. Motion fails. All right, that's where we are on this. Let's see. We're about to lose. Senator Simmons has to go make up a form someplace.
And Senator Hamby and I have to leave the street.
Okay.
I'm supposed to be testifying in two committees whenever I get there, but I'm going to be back.
I'll be back in probably 10 minutes.
All right, we'll be back in how many minutes?
Maybe three or four if they can't get to me, otherwise
we'll be
15.
Back in about 20.
Well, 15 or so. We should be able to put them out quickly.
We're going to take a recess and reconvene at 3:15.
3:15, okay, sir.
Yeah.
We mean recess?
We'll be in recess till 3:15. We can't do anything.
Right. We'll try to get through it with education as quickly as possible. If I get a floor over here.
What was the action on the last vote?
It failed. I've got four votes to go out and two votes opposed.
Oh, it needs five.
It needs five to go out. Okay, it's 3:18 p.m. and the Senate Judiciary Committee is returning from recess. Senators Brown and Pryor present will be in recess until a quorum arrives. Yeah, okay.
Hooray! God, I'm glad to be back for a minute.
For a minute, huh?
Good news for me. Like, my heart is
closing.
Good
news for me. Oh, water.
We shouldn't have been sent there.
You kind of got your bills prioritized.
All the bonding stuff out there.
All the bonding stuff out what?
Well, I'm just complaining that his 11D bonds got sent to trade to me.
Oh.
And I said we got all the bonding stuff there.
No, but I can do that when you're here, Jack. Yeah. So I have to be able to sign these and get them up too.
One, two, three,
and then. Yeah, we're waiting for a quorum. We're in recess while we get a quorum, which is going to be momentary.
Well, I appreciate the chance to breathe.
I'm going to sit up here.
One is the one that we just pulled the bill back from the floor, the Senate bill, because we've done exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's the same as
527.
Jan ought to be available, isn't he, Walt? He's done with Ways and Means. Ways and Means is done. One more Janet.
Mm-hmm.
What? One more and you'll get it.
48.
When we get one more.
I don't remember off the top of my head. No, I don't.
No, let's try the rest of them.
2098, that's a court of bills. Fees bill.
You found the screw up.
Down here.
Well, I don't think they did.
Okay, want to go back and run it again?
No, I don't think we need to.
You got a hand unscrew?
Hand unscrew, yeah.
Okay. I'm taking you on face value.
You owe him for his face.
You owe him a note.
Provisions of provision is enforceable with respect to those ways for which a person need not give notice of the right of lien, of a right to lien.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay, on a commercial improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial improvement.
Now, it's 3:25 p.m. The Senate Judiciary Committee will reconvene with Senators Failey, Brockman, Brown, Fry, Cohen, and...
Joyce is back here. That's five.
It's five. I just named five, didn't I?
If Senator... Yes.
Okay.
You're five.
Okay.
We are up to...
We are at...
2743.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, we
need
this. Probably
just rambling
through this.
That one in order. Okay. 2743 is in the which color?
Black book.
That seems like.
There is an engrossed version of the bill. And this is another of the bills that we heard last night.
Number is written upon 2743.
I know, I read about
it. Now, again, I don't recall who among the five other four members were here when we heard this yesterday, but the question I raised, which is really not on the merits of the bill, but you'll notice the relating clause. And the bill in its initial form would take care of the medical expenses, impose those expenses upon the jurisdiction which had authority over the prisoner. And the House amendment has to do with medical expenses of prisoners in the custody of police agencies, but not in a correctional facility. I remember, while being lawfully transported. The argument was made that there are sometimes people become injured or ill while they're in transit, like on extradition.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Fadley, I thought maybe you might have a comment on whether the relating clause was a problem on that amendment there.
Liable for cost of the prison held in a county facility.
Well, that's what the main bill does.